We got to the bottom of Samech Zayin and Mebez, the last five lines. So from the Gemara quotes from the Mishnah, the Mishnah had taught us that when they would carry out the part of the sayer to burn in the Beis HaSreifa, they would say klon b'miklol. So they'd weave them together, the cow and goat, on top of each other on sticks that were on the shoulders of a few different Kohanim. So the Gemara explains now, Amar Reb Yochanan kimin kliya. It was like a clear, it was like woven together, overlapped with each other, intertwined with each other of some sort. So the Gemara comments further, quotes a Braisa, Tana, lo haya menaschan nituach baser ola, ela or agabe baser. They did not cut up the baser like an ola would be done, and rather they leave the or on the baser itself. The way it works by a carbon ola is, first the pasuk says they would skin the animal, and then they cut it up after skinning the animal. The Gemara is saying here, when it came to the par v'sar, they would not skin the animal. They leave the hide on the cow, they leave the hide on the goat, and they cut it up as is. So Gemara wants to know, how do you know they leave the skin on before cutting up the par and sar of Yom Kippur? So Gemara quotes a Braisa here, last two lines of Samach Zayin Rebbe, is the Tanya, the Braisa says, Rebbe Omer, Nemar Kan or Ubasar Uperish. It says with respect to the par v'sar in Yom Kippurim that you had the leather, you had the flesh in the perish, v'nemar lahalon or basar perish. It says also in connection to the this is referring to the par kohen. If you look at Rashi explains here the par kohen mashiach. That's if the kohen gadol acts based on a certain hara. That's not a case of Yom Kippur, but it's called par kohen mashiach. It also says the words nemar lahalon or Ubasar Uperish. We have this Gzer Shava of the par and Sarvim Akipurim to the par of the Kohen Mashiach. So the Gemara explains on the top of Samiches now, Malahalan Aide Nituach Velo Aide Hefshit. Just like when it came to the Kohen Mashiach, they would cut up the animal, but they wouldn't skin it. So too by the par and sar of Yom Kippurim, Afkan Aide Nituach Velo Aide Hefshit. They would cut up the animal, but they would not skin the animal first. How do you know by the par kohen mashiach they would not skin the animal? The Gemara explains the Braisa, the Tanya, the kirvo or pirshu, the pasuk says the hotzi, the insides and the pirshu is all the parish, all the insides, the kirvo or pirshu, all that vahotzi, they take it all out whole. Milamed shemotziu shalom, they take it out to burn as a one whole animal. So yachol yisar fenu shalom, one might think maybe you should burn the animal when it's completely intact. It says here, its head and its leg sound like they were separate limbs. It says later on as well, it says, this is referring to the, which context is this? One second here. This is referring to a regular ola in general. It says, a rosho crime by an ola in general. Just like by an ola, you cut up the animal first, so too by the par, you cut up the animal first. Well, if you're going to make the gzeh shava of a kohen mashiach to that of the ola, so maybe imalahalan aydei hefshit. By the ola, we skin the animal first, then cut it. Afkan aydei hefshit. Maybe by the par kohen mashiach, we should also first skin the animal and then cut it up. So Gemara answers, Tama lomar v'kirbo upirsho, the insides and the waist remain, meaning what? My tamuda, what's the drasha? Amra papa, kishem shepirsho v'kirbo, just like the waist remained inside the animal, so to kach bisaro be'oro, the flesh remained within the skin. So based on this drasha, we conclude that by the par kohen mashiach, we leave the skin on and cut it up before burning it. And from there, we learn a gzeh shava to the par and sar of Yom Kippurim. We leave the skin on and cut it up as is prior to its burning. So now the Gemara says around 10 lines down on Samech Chesam and Aleph here, the two dots, Ume'emesai metamin begadim. At what point, when they take out the par v'sayer and they schlep it out to get burnt, at what point do those being involved in the sreifa do their begadim become tamei? So we had one opinion in the Mishnah that said once they leave the Beis Migdash, and the other opinion, Rabbi Shimon, said once most of the animal catches fire. So Gemara quotes a Braisa, Tanur Rabbanim. So how do you know where you take it out to? So this drash is a little bit complicated. It's going to be hard to figure out all the different psukim. You have to be very familiar with Parshas Vayikra to know the different psukim here. So I'm going to do, I guess, a little bit more superficial as I run through the Braisa here. So Tanur Rabbanim, the Braisa says, Yotzi el michutz lamachan ev sarfo. When it comes to the par and sa'ir, this is Parshas Achrimos, you take it out, chutz lamachan, and you burn it, you take it outside one camp. Lahalan ato no sein lam shalosh machanos. But with respect to the par kohen Mashiach, which also gets burnt, the regular par kohen Mashiach, not Yom Kippur, but if a kohen gadol acts on a hara, he brings what we mentioned before, the par kohen Mashiach. There it says, lahalan atanosin lehem mesholish machnas. It says three camps, you take it outside. V'kan atanosin lemachna achas. So why by the par v'sar of Yom Kippur it's only one machna, and by the par kohen Mashiach it's three machnas? So imkein lama nemar mechutz lemachna. So why are you saying only one machna by Yom Kippur? So Gemara says, "Lo melacha to tell me, kaven sheyotze chutz lemachna achas mitamin begadim." So really, the place of sreifa is three machnas that we learn from the par kohen Mashiach. So to par v'sar Yom Kippur is after three machnas, which means all the outside, all the encampments of the base of Mikdash. What do we learn from the fact that it says machna achas only? Nothing to do with where the sreifa takes place. That's a drasha to ask to when the begadim become tame. Once he exits the base of Mikdash, which is equivalent to machna achas, that's when the begadim become tame. So b'hasam minolin, how do we know by the par kohen Mashiach they burn it outside three machanos? So this is the drasha. So the Tani the Brisa says v'hotzias kol par. You need to take out the par kohen Mashiach, take it outside. Chutz l'shosh machanos ata omer. Chutz l'shosh machanos. So ain't elav chutz l'machna achanos. When it says take it outside, does it mean taking out three machanos or taking out only from one machanah? Kishu omer b'par ha'eda. This is referring to a similar case. This par kohen Mashiach, if the kohen gadol acts based on an incorrect hara, this is if the tzibur acts based on an incorrect hara. So by the par ha'eda, it says you take out that animal to be burned as well, el mechutz l'machana. Shein tamalomer, did it not already tell us we take it outside one machana? Sherei kvar namar v'sarf oso kasher sarf es par rishon. Just like the par rishon, the par kohen Mashiach, you take it out one machana. So too it says by the par ha'eda, you take it out sarf es ha'par rishon, just like the first one. So we already know implicitly from the pasuk, you take out the par kohen Mashiach one machana. Why to tell me el mechutz l'machana? That's superfluous. To tell me ma tamalomer el mechutz l'machana, litein lo machana shnias. To tell us that you actually take it out two machanas. That's the extra phrase of el mechutz l'machana. And there's even a third time it says kishu omer mechutz l'machana b'deshen. Yet a third appearance of this word shein tamalomer. Do we not know that you take it out already out from two machanas? Why you say it again el mechutz l'machana? It must be sharei kfar nemar el shevach hadeshen. You take it out to the place where the ashes get burnt. So tein lo machane shlishis. So what comes out from all the psukim there, again, you can only really appreciate this if you learn the psukim Vayikra well. So by all the psukim, we end up having three extra drashas of machanas, and we put them all together, we lump them all together, the par kohen Mashiach, the par ha'eda, and the par in Sar Yom HaKippurim, all them putting it together, they're all taken out to three machanas. That's the drasha. So the Gemara then says, okay, now Rabbi Shimon, hai michutz l'machane, my avile. Rabbi Shimon in the Mishnah, he said, at what point do the begadim become tame of those who are taking out the par, the sar of Yom Kippurim, once most of the animals burnt? So he does not hold that the moment you exit the Beis HaMikdash, the begadim are tame. So he has to figure out a drash now. What do you learn from the word michutz l'machana? So what does the Gemara answer? Mi barlei, it's needed for Rabbi Shimon l'chadatanya to teach me that Rabbi Eliezer Omer nemar kan michutz l'machana. It says by the par, the sar Yom Kippurim, you take it out one machana. V'nemar lahalan, it says, by the parhaduma, it says, michutz l'machana, you take it outside the machana. So, ma'kan chutz l'shosh machanas, afkan lahalan, af lahalan chutz l'shosh machanas, just like we have that the par, the sa'ir, is taken out three machanos, just based on what we learned in the earlier drasha. We take that from Yom Kippur and apply it to the parhaduma, that too is taken outside of three machanas to burn. So, that's the drasha of chutz l'machana, to make a gzer shava to parhaduma. And further, Mala Halan, just like by the Paraduma, B'mizracha shel Yushalayim, the burning place is on the eastern part of Yushalayim, so to Afkan B'mizracha shel Yushalayim, the Par, B'sar shel Yom HaKippurim, is burnt on the eastern part of Yushalayim. So, it was not Ein Echanami, it was not, but it was, the location was three machanas, Ein Echanami, you're right, it was never inside. Yep, Ein Echanami, but the location was outside three machanas, the same exact place where they burnt the par, the sar shem Yom HaKippurim, that same exact spot as the par duma. So then the Gemara says, last couple lines here, or last line really of Sam Chesam and Aleph here, Rabbanon heichi sarfla. So where, according to Rabbanon, who don't have this drasha, where do they burn it? Rabbi Shimon says they burnt it on the eastern side based on the gzeir shava par duma. Par duma is certainly based on the eastern side, that the pasuk tells us clearly. If you look at Rashi, just look at Rashi, five lines on the bottom here. Mala halan bipara duma bimizrachash Yushalayim, was burnt in the eastern part of Yushalayim, dechsibbe el nohach pnei olam moed. Alma Omid b'Mizrach Upanav Lamar. If he was standing in the east, he was facing west. Keneged Pischa Shel Heichal. Remember, we said he had to be able to see inside to the Heichal, that the way the height of the walls and the doors were. So he's on the eastern side, looking to the west, inside towards the Kodesh Kedoshim. So that certainly was a given. And based on the Gezeirah Shava, the Par V'Sarir are also burnt in the eastern part of Yerushalayim because he had the words Chutz L'Machna. But Rabbanan did not have the drasha Mechutz L'Machna, because the Mechutz L'Machna they already used to tell me when did the Begadim become Tamei, the moment they exit the Machna, the Beis HaMikdash. So how did they know where was the location of the burning of the Par V'Sarir on Yom HaKippur? So Gemara says, it's Kidatanya, the Brisa says, Heichan Nisrafin, where were they burnt? Says the Gemara onto Amud Beis now, Litzfona Shel Yerushalayim, not in the eastern part, but in the northern part. Why the northern part? And Chutz L'Shlosh Machnos, the Gemara says, and outside three Machnos, that was already a given. But why the north? Says Rashi in the very top here, Litzfona Shel Yerushalayim, Shekol Maaseh Chatas B'Tzafon. There's a klal that whenever anything having to do with the Chatas is always in the north. So if you remember, the Mishnah in Ezer Makomon, in the fifth parak of Zvachim, which people say every single morning in Karbanos, the Chatas get shechted in the northern part above the Mizbeach. So here as well, the burning is taking place in the northern part of Yerushalayim. So that's the machlokas. Was it in the east or was it in the north? Comes along now. Rabbi Yossi Omer, Abes Hadeshen Nisrafen. What does that mean, Abes Hadeshen Nisrafen? Says Rashi in the top line here. Abes Hadeshen Sarach Shiyaktim Lasham Deshen Hamizbeach. They have to actually, before burning the Pyrosar, wherever it was, they have to actually bring some ashes, some of the Deshen from the Mizbeach inside. Because the pasuk says, where would you burn it? What was the name of the location? It was called Shefach HaDeshen. Shefach means to pour. Deshen means ashes, a place where you pour ashes. So if you're going to bring the Par V'Sayer, you must be Machtim. You first have to make it a place of Shefach HaDeshen. So they took some ashes from the Mizbeach, they spilled it in the area, whether the Mizrach, whether the north, and then after putting the ashes, then they would burn the Par V'Sayer Shel Yom HaKippurim. The Gemara then says two lines down, now Amar Rava. Rava says, "Man tana de paliga aleh de Rabbi Yossi." Who is the opinion that argues on Rabbi Yossi? Rabbi Yossi is the one who says that you needed to put the ashes there first. Who says you don't have to put ashes there first? That must be Rabbi Eliezer ben Yaakov. Who he has a different drasha. The Tanya, El Shefach Adeshen Yosef. What does that pasuk teach us? If you pour it in the area where the Shefach Adeshen, his drasha is Sheyehe Lasham Deshen, that's the first, that's the Tanakama, that there should be ashes there first, that's Shita's Rabbi Yossi. Rabbi Eliezer ben Yaakov Omer, Sheyehe Mekomo Meshufach, that the area should be sloped. Nothing to do with pouring ashes there, but it should be Meshufach, it should be sloped. Look at Rashi. Rashi says, Rabbi Eliezer ben Yaakov, who? Damar lo Ashminen Ela, Sheyehe Mekomo Madron, so it should be sloped. So when the ashes are created from burning the par, v'sar, it will fall to the bottom. But not that you have to makdim deshin this. So that's the machlokas between Rabbi Yossi and Rabbi Eliezer ben Yaakov. So Gemara now says, Amar le Abaye, v'dilma b'mkomo meshubach hu depligi. So maybe they're arguing about the slope of the area, which Rashi explains. Look at Rashi first, narrow line down. V'dilma b'mkomo meshubach hu depligi. Umodi Rabbi Eliezer ben Yaakov, sheyakdim misham deshin. Maybe he agrees to that concept. You should actually bring ashes there first. But they're arguing about whether there's a second drasha as well. El deboi nami mekomo meshubach. But do you also need a sloped area? That was a secondary machlokas. But maybe they both agree you need to have ashes there first placed from the mizbech. So that's an open question the Gemara leaves off. So now the Gemara says, Tanya Rabbanan, and the Braisa teaches us, HaSorif, the one who burns it. The whole pasuk reads, this is in Parsha Achrimos. I'll read you the pasuk. Vasorif osam, he who burns the par v'sayer, yichabes begadav v'rachos es b'saro, b'mayim v'achoychein yavo el machne. So what does that mean? So Hasarif, who's the burner? Hasarif says the Gemara, mitame begadim, v'lo hamatitz etzaor. He who burns it, not the one who lights the fire. That's not called burning. That's lighting, that's striking a match. The one who burns it, we'll see in a second what that means. V'lo hamatitz etzaor, v'lo masadis amaracha, not the one who sets up the logs either. V'ezu sarif, who's called the sarif? For the one who's kept on throwing the more fire on or mixing around the par v'sarif, the one who's stoking the coals, the one who's very involved in the sreifa, that's the sarif. But the one who just lights the match, that's not even called the sarif. So he's the one, the sarif is the one who gets his begadim tamer. So yachal af mishinasu efer mitamim begadim. One might have thought, let's say the cow and the goat already turned to ashes, and a guy goes to fix it, or I don't know, make it turn to more ashes. One might think he's also called the sarif, and his begadim should become tamei. Tamalomer, osam, them, Osam mitamim begadim v'lo mishenasu efer. Only when they're still intact, where you could call them limbs, the cut up limbs of a cow and a goat, but the moment they turn to ashes, they're no longer called osam. They're no longer recognizable as a par visar, and the tame the begadim are no longer tame. Those who are involved from that stage and on. So then the Mishnah says. So then comes along the Mishnah and says, Rabbi Eliezer, Rabbi Shimon Omer, hapar mitame, minitech hapar ein mitame. Only the cow itself is mitame, but not if it's nitach. If it's nitach, it's not going to become tame. So what does that mean? So what does that mean, nitach? It means if it's burnt. How burnt does that mean? So what's the difference between the first opinion of Tanakhama and Rabbi Eliezer, Rabbi Shimon? So the Gemara says, b'may benayu, ika benayu, deshavya harucha. If the animal, when the animal gets burnt, the par v'sar gets burnt, it turns into black charcoal, but it's not turned into ashes yet. So there's a stage where it's like almost unrecognizable, but it's not into ashes yet. That's the nafkamina. So if you look at Rashi to explain this nafkamina, the shavya charucha, davi nitach basar, the basar is very burnt, it's singed in a very serious way, v'eframia lohavi, but did not turn yet to ashes. So the tanakama metamin achiyasu efer. Those who are involved, until it's turned to ashes, it's still considered osam and metame begadim, the osam krina bet. You could still call that a cow. You still call that a sheep, a goat rather. Even though it's pretty black, it's still called intact. However, l'Rebbe Elazar, Rebbe Shimon, neshavya charucha, that's called already too singed, and lo metame de lo par mikri, that's not called a cow anymore, so that's nafkamina, if it's black and charcoaled, if it's yet not yet ashes. So now the final mission of the parak teaches us as follows. Amru lo l'kohen gadol, higiyasar l'midbar. So now the Kohen Gadol is busy waiting in the base of Mikdash. And they sent out the Ishiti to send off the Sar Lazazel to be pushed off the cliff. So now we're going to bring our attention back to the Kohen Gadol. What's he busy doing now at this very time? So Amru lo, they would give him a report and say, l'kohen gadol, higiyasar l'midbar. The goat already reached the midbar. So now what's the issue with that? So if you look at Rashi, Rashi says, Amru lo l'kohen gadol, she'enu rashai l'haschil, the Kohen Gadol cannot move on to the next step, the next avoda, ad shegia sira sa'ir midbar, until the goat reaches the midbar. Shenamar v'shilach es ha'sara b'midbar. Only after the goat arrives in the midbar, acharkach v'eschel hachatas yaktir mizbecha, then he begins his next stage of burning the fats of the mizbeach. So they let him know the sa'ir made its way to the midbar. U'minayin hayu yodin, how would they know? They couldn't see, they're very far away, it's 12 mil away. So how would they know? Shegia sar l'midbar. How would they know? Dirkos hayu osim. What's dirkos? Rashi explains them. B'nei adam omdim miyushalayim latzuk. There were men, people standing from Yushalayim all the way until the cliff. B'chtei sheyirezeh simano shozeh. And they would signal to each other. U'manifin osam hasmuchan l'midbar b'sudarim. Those who are closest to the midbar would start to wave a little handkerchief. It says Samech Lo, those who was next to him, I don't know, a few hundred feet away from him, who could see each other, Rao would see, Umeinif Gamhu, and he'd wave another flag as they got closer to the Yushalayim. Baruch Haveru al Samech Yushalayim, that this whole system, they had, I don't know, 20 guys standing, and when the guy saw the midbar, he'd wave it, the next guy would wave it, the next guy would wave it, and the whole line, until eventually they got to Yushalayim, they reported, the star made its way to the midbar, let's begin the next step. So the Mishnah continues again, that they had their calls, Hayu, that these little messengers, I guess, Hayu Osin, Umanifin b'sudarim, they would wave their handkerchiefs. V'yodin shegiyah sar l'midbar, and they would know when the goat made its way to the midbar. So Amar Rabbi Yehuda, Rabbi Yehuda said, "V'alo simin gadol hayalahem Yushalayim vad base." Wasn't there even a better simin? Hayalam Yushalayim vad base chidudo shlosh milim. So base chidudo was the beginning of the midbar. The truth is, they didn't have to wait for the goat to be pushed off. It was just once the goat made its way into the midbar, and then he had to walk another 10 mil. But once he got to the midbar, the Kohen Gadol could proceed to the next stage, the next avoda. So from the time for Yushalayim until the beginning of the midbar was 1 mil. That was 1 mil total. So now, the din was, if you look at, again, back to the Mishnah, it was that Hayalehem Yushalayim vad beis chidudo, shlosha mil, there's 3 mil. Holchan mil, they'd walk 1 mil. Bechoz mil, they'd return back a mil. Because you remember that the people from Yushalayim, the Yakir Yushalayim, would escort the Yeshiti 1 mil to the first sukkah. So they'd walk 1 mil, they'd walk back 1 mil, and then the Mishnah says, Vishoen Kadei Mil, they wait a time of another 3 mil, and that's 3 mil it takes for the Kohen Gadol, rather the Ishiti, to get to the beginning of the midbar, and then he could go. So now the Rashash points out, you just stand a mil, you just wait around. So they walked a mil, they came back a mil, and then he said, the distance, the circumference of the base of Migdash, he calculates, was of the Har Bais, was actually 1 mil. So they walk a mil to escort him to the first sukkah. They walk back a mil to Har Bayis. They walk around the base of the Har Bayis, which itself was another mil, it was a third mil. And that was the calculation, the Zman, that you knew already that Yishita got to the Midbar, the beginning of the Midbar, and the Kohen Gadol could proceed with the next Avoda. So the Mishnah says again, V'yodin Shiagia Sar L'Midbar, and that's how they would know. That was the indicator. You didn't need these Darkalos. You didn't need the messengers. The time it took to walk would be sufficient. So it comes along the Mishnah, and it says, Rabbi Shmuel Omer, he says, there's another indicator that they had, at least in the beginning of the base of Mikdash. Wasn't there another indicator when the Kohen Gadol made its way? We know that the red string was hanging, was tied to the top of the Heichal, at least in the beginning of the base of Mikdash. When the goat made its way to the Midbar, the string would turn white. The red string would turn white. That would indicate that the Kapar was achieved. And then you know, he got to the Midbar, so the Kohen Gadol could proceed. That only existed again so long as they tied it in the Heichal. But as we know, when they got embarrassed, when the red string never turned white, they began tying it on the goat itself in the rock. That indicator was no longer relevant, but you could still rely on either the messengers, the waving of the flags, or of the 3 mil it would take to walk back and forth, and then once around the Har Bayis. So Gemara now says, can complete the parak here, Amar Bayi says, Shema Mina, we learn from here, the Beit Chidudo of this area, but Midbar Kaima, Beit Chidudo was in the beginning, it was apparently whatever it was situated at the entrance to the Midbar. For Hakamashon, this teaches us that Kasava Rabbi Yehuda, Kevin Shagia Sar the Midbar, Nasis Mitzvah. Once it arrived to the Midbar, that was a mitzvah. It wasn't thrown off the cliff. That was an additional stage. But once it got to the Midbar, that's considered complete enough, whereby now you could allow the Kohen Gadol to proceed and read the Parsha, which is going to be the next parak, the next Mishnah, what the Kohen Gadol is going to do once he knows that the Ishiti got and arrived to the Midbar. Hajin Lach Shnei Series. Let's begin now the seventh parak of Yuma, called the parak Balo Kohen Gadol, the Kohen Gadol Gam. What does he come to do? The Mishnah says the Balo Kohen Gadol Likros, he begins to read. What would he read? Rashi says Balo Likros. Balo Likros is a parsha. The Afinim Miluim, the Amirim Parakam. If you remember Daf Hayim Beit, I know it was a long time ago, but we had a drasha there as to the source of reading a certain parsha on Yom Kippur. As Rashi says, Minayin Shaf Mikra Parsha Ma'akev, it's referring to during the Miluim. What was Ma'akev? What was a Ma'akev? But we learn from there that just like the Miluim, they had to read certain psukim from the Torah, so to Yom Kippur, the Kohen Gadol reads psukim from the Torah. So what exactly would he do? So again, Balal Kohen Gadol Likros, he comes to read from the Sefer Torah. Imirata Likros Bibigde Butz Kari, if he wants to leave the Bigde Lavanon, he's allowed to leave the Bigde Lavanon. Imlav, he doesn't want to read the, and takes, he wants to take off the Bigde Lavan. He could be Kari Bit Stalis Lavan, he could wear Mishalo, he could wear his, personally, it's some white robe he wore, not the Bigde Kuna. He could put on a white robe if he wanted and read the Parsha that way. So Chazan HaKnesses Notel Sefer Torah. The Chazan HaKnesses, who must have been the Gabbai of some sort, he would take the Sefer Torah, and the Sefer Torah, Rashi explains, it was a Aron, it was a base Knesset that was nearby the Azar and the Har Bayis. So he would go ahead and Chazan HaKnesses, note the Sefer Torah, but notes in the Rosh HaKnesses. Rosh HaKnesses notes in the Skan. Skan notes in the Kohen Gadol. There's a whole, it passed on to a few very prestigious individuals. The Kohen Gadol, Omer and Mekabel, he'd stand and he'd accept the Sefer Torah. The Kar, he'd read from the Parshas Achrimos. V'ach be'esor, he'd read from these Parshios. One's in Achrimos, one is in Parshas Emor, which are pretty close to each other. And the Golo Sefer Torah, he then close up the Sefer Torah, Omenicha, Becheiko, he'd hold on to it in his chest. For Omer, he said, Yosemi ma shekarasi lifnechem, more so than when I read to you from the Torah, Kasef Khan, it's written more about Achrimos inside. Ubeser shebechumash habikudim, at Parshas Pinchas, where it also describes some of the karbanos of Yom Kippur, that he'd read Korah Alpeh, he'd have to read by heart, because it would take too long for him to scroll over to Parshas Pinchas. From Emor, it would be Tircha Detzibur, he'd have to read Alpeh, which is quite interesting, because normally you're not allowed to read Psukim Alpeh. We'll see that tomorrow as to explain this, but I'll just bring an interesting shah that comes up based on this very line of the mission here. It's brought down the Tashbet as the following shah. He wants to know, we know there's a din if a person finds a psul, a taos, in the Torah while he's reading it, you have to take out a new Sefer Torah and begin from the beginning of the Parsha. Fine. Let's say you find the mistake when only reading Maftir. The Baal Kori finished all seven Aliyahs. He didn't notice any mistakes. Everything was good. He gets to Maftir and he notices a mistake in Maftir. Do you have to take out a new Sefer Torah in order to begin Maftir again? Everything else has been shelved away. You did the seven Aliyahs. Everything is fine. But now Maftir. Do you have to bring out a new Sefer Torah to finish Maftir? Or no, it's only Maftir. It's not such an obligation. You could go ahead and read it. Alpeh. So he goes back and forth. He says, maybe the answer should be, depends on the nature of the maftir. If it's a maftir that's unique, it's a cholos hayom, like a special maftir, such as the dal parshios, zachor, and so on, then maybe you have to, he thinks, you have to take out a new sefer Torah to fulfill the obligation of parah, and the zachor, and chodesh, and so on. But when it comes to a regular maftir, like parshios, parshios chukas, parshios korach, and balak, and so on, that's not such an obligation. And there you could just go ahead and read Al-Peh. And it brings a riot, just like from here, by Yom Kippur, the Kohen Gadol was a tircha, the tzibur, to take out a new Sefer Torah. He was able to read Parshas Pinchas Ba'al-Peh, because it wasn't so much a chiv. So too, he could read it as well when it comes to the maftir. But then he says, maybe it's not so true. Maybe the case of Yom Kippur and the Kohen Gadol is different. Maybe we're making by the Kohen Gadol. He's not being moti anybody. There's no chiv, a tzibur, to read it. The Kohen Gadol reads it. It's his personal chiv. He can read Al-Peh. When it comes to mafti, even though the obligation might be a lower level, but still he's being motzi the entire tzibur, maybe in that case you would actually have to bring out a new sefer Torah. In the end of the day, the Magen Avraham paskins, if one does find a tos in the mafti, you do not need to take out a new sefer Torah. So let's continue with the mission. Let's finish this this mission here. So then he'd kore al peh, he'd recite psukim from Parshas Pinchas Baal Peh. Umivarech aleh shmona brachas, he would recite eight brachas, al ha-Torah, val ha-Avoda, val ha-Odah, val Mechiyas Avon, val Mikdash, b'fnei Asmo, val Yisrael b'fnei Atzman, val Yishan b'fnei Asmo, val Kohanim b'fnei Atzman, val Shar Tefillah, and the rest of the Tefillah. Those were the eight brachas he would say. What's noticeably absent here is he does not say a bracha, birchas Hazdar, beforehand. The Achronim try to figure out why not. So some say, no, when it says the first bracha of the al ha-Torah, that was referring to the bracha of al-Torah before reading the Torah. Others say, no, it wasn't. Some say there was no Birchas HaTorah before, and he didn't have to say, because this was not a Chovas HaTzibur. Others say, even though it wasn't mentioned, it was obvious. Of course, he says. So there are a few different pshatim as to whether or not and what was referring to the bracha before the reciting. So then the Mishnah says, Haroa Kohen Gadol, Kishu Kara, those who observed the Kohen Gadol reading from the Torah, Eino Roa Parvisar HaNisrafim, could not see the Parvisar being burnt. And Haroa Kohen Gadol and Roa Parvisar HaNisrafim, those who would observe the burning of the goat and the cow, Eina Roa Kohen Gadol, did not see the Kohen Gadol Kishu Kore. For Lo Mibnei She'ena Rosh, not because you weren't allowed to, you would be allowed to in theory, El She'ha'isa Derech Rechoka, there's a very large distance between where the burning took place and where the Kohen Gadol read, Umlecha Shneim Shava Kachas, they were both took place at the same exact time, so it was just impossible for it to happen, but it wasn't anything wrong with it, it just couldn't happen. Fine. The Gemara now says, Mitikatani Bitzalis Lavan Mishalo, that he was able to wear his white robe from his house if he wanted to while reading the Torah, Mechlav the Kri Lav Avodahi. Right? If he could wear other clothing, must be that the Kri is not called an Avoda. Because had it been an Avoda, he had to have worn the Big Day Lavan. So from the mere fact that he does not need to wear Big Day Lavan, it must be it's not an Avoda. Okay, so it's not an Avoda. However, Bikatani, it says in the Mishnah yet, Imurata Likros Bivig Day Butz Kare. But if he wanted to wear Big Day Lavan, he's allowed to wear Big Day Lavan while the Kriya. Now, wait a second. That means he's wearing Big Day Lavan when he's not doing an Avoda, because the Kriya is not an Avoda. So, Shmasmina, we learn from here. Big Day Kuna, Nitna, Lehanos Ben, you're allowed to get Hana from Big Day Kuna even when you're not actually performing an Avoda. So the Gemara says, what do you mean? Dilma Shiny Kriya, Ditzarech Avodi. Maybe Kriya is different. If you're just playing ball, okay, that would be inappropriate to wear Big Day Lavan. But here, Kriya, even though Kriya is not Avoda itself, it's still Tzarech Avoda, it's still part of the Seder Hayom, and therefore you're allowed to wear Big Day Lavan for Avoda or that which is Tzarech Avoda. But that's not a Raya, you could wear it for a non-Avoda. The Ibar Ilan, there was a question that was been raised, Big Day Kuna, Nitna Lihanos Behen, Olo, Nitna Lihanos Behen. Can one derive Hana from Big Day Kuna outside of the base of English, outside of doing an Avoda? So the Gemara says, Tashma. There's a mission, Meseches Tamid, that teaches Lo Hayu Yishenim Bivig Day Kodesh. So the halacha is that when the Levim and Kohanim, they would do Shmira. They would Shomer, there would be Shmira, 24 spots around the Beis HaMikdash where they'd watch the do security of the Beis HaMikdash. So the Kohanim, they'd take off the Big Day Kuna, and they'd sleep without the Big Day Kuna. So the Gemara says as follows, Shenehu Deloha Delo, they couldn't sleep in the Big Day Kuna because that would be getting inappropriate Hana from the Big Day Kuna. But the implication is, HaMechel Achli, they're able to eat wearing Big Day Kuna. They only took it off when they had dinner, they ate it. When they went to sleep is when they took off the Big Day Kuna. So you see that you can wear Big Day Kuna, even Shlomo Shas Avoda. So Gemara said, what do you mean? Dilma, Shiny Achila, the Torah Avodi. Maybe eating was considered Torah Avoda. It wasn't that they're having a stama, no shawarma from the local restaurant. They're eating the food from the Karbanos. Kidatanya, V'achlo Samashe Kufar Behem, and the Kohanim eat the karbanos and the baal gets kapara, Melamed shakohanim ochlin ubayim miskaprin. That when the kohen eats, that's when the baal gets a kapara. The baal brought a chatas, the kohen eats it, the eating gives a kapara to the baal. That's tzarech avoda. It's not an avoda itself, but it's tzarech avoda. That's not a raya when a guy is doing a non-avoda, he could wear a big dekuna. So Gemara says, okay, let's make the following diak. Sheino hudelo, he can't sleep in the big dekuna when doing the shmirah. Ha hilucha mahalchen. He's able to walk wearing the big dekuna. There's no tzarech avoda stam walking. So isn't that a good implication that you're allowed to wear big dekuna when walking and it's not an avoda? It's not even a tzarech avoda. So Gemara says no. Bidin hu dalucha namilo. The truth is he can't walk with a big dekuna. He certainly can't sleep with a big dekuna. So why did the Mishnah only emphasize the sleep, implying that halicha was allowed, if in fact really halicha isn't allowed? So the Gemara says that the reason why they've emphasized Shena was simply to set up the Seifa. Because the Seifa, Itzrech Lei, was setting up the Seifa, Poshin, Mekaplin, Menichin, Tachas, Rashem. That the halacha was, when they take off the big dekuna, they'd fold it up, and they place it underneath the head to tell us that din. If you look at Rashi, Rashi says, if the Seifa, Itzrech Lei, top Rashi and Samach Tes, Shena, the Nukit, Mishum Dibai, Lashminan, Shemutil, Litnan, Tachas, Rashem. That you'll have to place it underneath the head. They could use the big dekuna as a pillow, Vesulo, Ichpaslan, Im Yafiach, Ma'achar, Shaposhin. And we're not concerned if they pass gas on the big dekuna, even though it's inappropriate, it's still allowed. We're going to see tomorrow, tomorrow daf, that they didn't actually put it underneath their head. They put it next to the head. But either way, the reason why they're talking about sleep in the Mishnah and Tamid was to set up this halacha of sleeping next to the big dekuna. But it wasn't coming to tell me that halicha was allowed. In a chanami, even halicha wouldn't be allowed with big dekuna. And that's how the Gemara seems to conclude. So let's quickly recap. We start by talking about that when they cut up the parvisayer, they'd leave the skin on and cut it up as is. They'd learn the cutting up from the ola, but they wouldn't skin it. By the ola, they'd skin it and cut it up. Here, they'd only cut up, but they wouldn't actually skin it. They'd leave it intact. So then the Mishnah described, how do we know where you burn it? It was taken outside three machnos to burn, based on different drushes. So then we had, what was the word machna achas teaching me? It was an extra word in Yom Kippur, telling me that once he leaves the first machna, which is the base of Migdash, that's when the begadim would become tame. Rabbi Shimon, who argues and says, no, he'd become tame only once most of the animal was burnt. What does he learn with the word machna achas? There was a kaseir shavat to paraduma, just like the paraduma, just like the parvisar was burnt outside three machnos, so to the paraduma is burnt outside three machnos. And from that same kaseir shavat, just like the paraduma was burnt on the eastern part of Yishlayim, so too the parvisar was burnt on the eastern part. And that was argued on by their bun, who said that no, it was actually burnt in the northern part. The parvisar was in the northern part because it was a chatas. Rav Yossi says, what does it mean in Beis Hadeshin? Beis Hadeshin meant you have to put ashes there first before burning the parvisar. And Rabbi Ezra ben Yaakov says, no, it was actually meant the slope of the area should be sloped, whereby the ashes, when burnt, will fall down the mountain. And then we spoke about who is the sarif, who's begun to get tame, a person who's involved in the actual burning. But the one who lights the match, the one who sets up the logs, they're not called involved in the sarif, only the person who's mamish involved in the burning. And we did machlok is whether he's anyone who's involved until it turns to ashes, or anyone who's involved until it turns black, even though it's not yet ashes. Then the Mishnah told us, how did they know when the sar got to the midbar so that the Kohen Gadol could begin the kriya? Either it's because they had the flags, or because they walked a mill, walked another mill, walked a third mill, or they had the simon of the Lashon Zoharis that was in the Heichal, at least for the beginning part of the Beis HaMikdash. And then we spoke of the Mishnah that the new parak the Kohen Gadol would read. He could either wear Bigdei Lavan or he could wear his personal robe. Then they passed the Sefer Torah to get him. He'd read from Acharei Moses and Emor. He'd read Baal Peh from Parshas Bamidbar. He'd say the eight brachas afterwards. And whoever saw the burning of the Parvisar couldn't see the burning, couldn't see the reading of the Kohen Gadol. And then we said it must be that this is not an avoda from the very fact that he doesn't have to wear the Bigdei Lavan. But if it's not an avoda, how is he allowed to wear the Bigdei Lavan if he so chooses? It must be you don't have to. You can't get enough from the Bigdei Kuna. Where it says no, this is tzarech avoda, avoda and tzarech avoda you're allowed to wear, but non tzarech avoda you're not be allowed to wear. They brought another raya from the case of eating. When it comes to eating the karbanos, that's also called tzarech avoda. But the Gemara did conclude that you actually cannot get hana, so you can't sleep with the big tikuna, nor can you walk with the big tikuna. We're not involved in the tzarech avoda. Everybody have a wonderful Shabbos.